Welcome to Tribulation News with your host, Dr. Elizabeth Motke. Today I have special guest Stan Deo on the air with me. He is known for earth changes and anything pertaining to that with much knowledge and experience. Welcome to the show, Stan.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Motke. What are we going to talk about today?
Oh, we're going to basically talk about the latest earthquakes, latest volcanoes, anything in regards to earth changes, and maybe some prophecy in there too.
Well, that probably fits in. All that stuff is kind of fitting into prophecy that you mentioned. We've got your link to the show, which will be up now and later when it comes on air. We have something called the End Times Timeline, which Holly has put together, which is a graphic and a text representation of the end times, which might be of help when we're talking about things in prophecy, where certain things that happen, like earthquakes, volcanoes, and that kind of stuff. But anyway, that's on our site, standeo.com.
Okay.
And it's free.
Yeah. I'll have to check that out. I didn't know you had a timeline going on there.
Well, Holly did that a couple years back, and if you print it out, it runs several yards wide. It's so you can read everything and see it in detail.
Wow. That's great. Probably more detail than my timeline.
Probably.
Yeah. A lot of people may not know who you are. Can you maybe introduce yourself to the audience about your background and education and all that?
Well, I worked in a classified project which was beyond the scope of the normal politicians in the United States and Australia and England and Norway, where these things were taking place. I worked under Dr. Edward Teller developing classified flying saucer technology that it was in a group, a research group, that transcends different elected governments. It's ongoing. And I was recruited by them when I lived in Dallas, was working in the computer industry, and developed an idea how to make flying saucers work. And just before I filed for a patent, they approached me to join them and to work with them down in Australia, which is close to the South Pole base. My education was not finished. I went to the Air Force Academy, the formal education anyway. But after that, I've studied a number of disciplines and computers and computer languages and graphic animations, marine technology, propulsion technology, advanced spacecraft propulsion technology, and I've even lectured in university, at Curtin University in Perth, Australia. Is that enough? Or?
Yeah, that's plenty. Wow, I didn't know you went to Australia and lectured over there. Wow.
Well, I lived there for 30 years, so it's not a stretch of the imagination.
Wow. That's impressive, though, because, I mean, I lived in Thailand for 4.5 weeks. So, I mean, wow.
You lived where? In Thailand?
I was in Thailand for 4.5 weeks. I taught English over there.
We're in Bangkok or close to there?
In Chiang Mai.
Chiang Mai. I have family friends there, the Rojanasan family, Dr. Rojanasan. But, Thailand has a lot of interesting stories to tell about spooky things like balls of light that pop up out of the graves of a great battlefield there near Bangkok, and at night you can see the spirits, you know, floating across the land, that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, I can believe that. Yeah, and it's amazing when I was over there, just how dark it was. I could feel the evil everywhere I went, and wow, and now look at where we're at globally, far worse.
Well, certainly, the United States is heading that way, too, isn't it?
Yeah. It's almost there. Well, yeah. So, everything's happening so rapidly.
Yes, more rapidly than many of us thought it would happen. I just open up the news every day now, and there's something new and foreboding that's in the news that affects us all personally.
Yeah. Like, I just saw on Steve Quill's site that there's the European Central Bank has crashed. Saw that.
Well, you have on our website, Holly does a lot of news, you know, every day on things like that, including earth changes and economic changes. So you can see similar links to that there.
Yeah, I love your website. It's wonderful. And it's standeo.com. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's actually two websites in one. When you get to standeo.com, up in the very left-hand corner, it says free prep info. And if you click on that, it takes you to another whole new sub-website that Holly maintains on stuff that you can just download, print, and use on survival skills, firearms, emergency prep supplies, what you need, that kind of stuff. And so you can get that there, too, and it costs you nothing.
Which is great.
It is.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to help.
Exactly. I hear you. What do you think is going on with the San Andreas Fault?
Well, something, if you look at the earthquake forecast map I've done for today, you can get to that by going to our website, standeo.com, and underneath the pictures of the books and that are across the top of the page, you'll see a little tiny kind of picture. It says seismic volcanic potential, Stan's daily quake forecast. If you click on that and click to March the 7th, you'll see that at this moment, there's a lot happening in seismic developments along the western side, western coast of South America, along the western coast of Central America, and even the southern, up as far as the southern part of Mexico. But California in the Baja and up in the Juan de Fuca plate over the last week have shown signs of increasing activity, but I don't think that the San Andreas Fault is ready to boom yet. However, in the last month, there's been such tremendous activity as seismic pressures have built up and released on the western side of the Pacific Ocean, along what's called the Arc of Fire, or Ring of Fire. Massive numbers of Richter 5 or better earthquakes have been occurring, large earthquakes, atypical type patterns on the western side, while the eastern side of the Pacific, where we are, has been kind of, you know, ho-hum type earthquake activity. But I'm seeing the pattern now diminishing over on the western side and starting to pick up over on the eastern side from South America right up to Mexico, and now starting to creep up into where we are and where the San Andreas Fault and all the little parasitic fault lines are located. So I think something is in the making there, and we need to pay attention to that.
Is this a part of the Earth expanding?
I think it could be, yes. There's been a number of papers and formal research papers, and then popular books that have been written about the expansion of the Earth, even videos that have been made. And if you check on our website at standeo.com and go up to Stan's Corner and click on Show Images on that page, you'll see that I've listed several topics there with a view to, you know, giving you animations or stills and discussions on various things that are happening. And one of those is on the expansion of the Earth, and you'll see that in hollow planets, stars, and galaxies. And when you click on that, it will take you in some places to a link of Neil Adams, a cartoonist website, where he's actually done brilliant animations from NASA photographs of Mars, of our moon, of Saturn. It's all there anyway. There's about 9 videos showing how they have all expanded from a former diameter. And you're looking at somewhere around a 25% increase on them and us in our diameter from the point when the land masses were all solid and hooked together. This earthquake activity that we're seeing now, I think, is because the Earth is not only trying to expand again, I don't know how fast that will happen, but also because of the polar regions of the planet are emitting heat and are melting the ice caps. And I think this is part of a process that occurs in the gravitational field, which causes the expansion of planets as they age, and stars and galaxies, same thing. If that's the case, we may actually see periodic, you know, almost immediate openings of the south and north pole where heat escapes from the core before the polar openings close again. All this leads to a very unstable mantle of the planet.
And is it true that it can even make time shorter also as it expands?
Well, if you measure time on a full rotation, it depends on whether, you know, it takes longer for the rotation to occur. If you look at a ballerina opening out her arms in a spin, in a pirouette, you'll see as she opens her arms out to make a bigger diameter, in essence, she slows down. So if the passage of time is measured by how long it takes from point A on the planet to go around once and come back, since there'll be more distance, it would make the length of a second longer, which would stretch out time rather than compress it. So I don't know that would be what would be compressing the time.
Okay. I know earthquakes cause polar shifts, so I don't know. I mean, I've noticed, like, in the California area, I was asking one of my friends who lives over there. He's also a radio person as well. I asked him, you know, when does the sun rise and sunset over there? And he told me basically it's an 8-hour time frame now. I know it used to be longer than that. It had to be at least 12. And over here where I'm at in the Midwest, I've noticed it's at least 11 hours. It used to be 12. And so I was just wondering if the earthquakes had a part in that, or the Earth expanding, or I don't know.
I would have to look at the data that your friend is basing that on, because we use a number of astronomical programs here, software on the Macs and the iPad, to track sunrise, sunset. And you have to do it based upon where you are on the planet. So obviously the further north you get, the longer the period of time will be darkness or light, and they alternate. I don't know that the earthquakes have shifted the polar regions so much that the sun doesn't rise for the right amount of time in usual places. And not certainly not like hours of difference. Seconds maybe, or fractions of seconds, yes. It has been published in the popular, you know, press, the media, that the earthquakes, you know, some of the Richter 9s that have occurred in Japan and over in the Indian Ocean, have caused the Earth's rotation to slow a bit. But even though the North Pole is drifting twice as fast as the South Pole at the moment, it's not moving that far to cause that much change. So I'd have to withhold, comment on that officially until I've had time to look at the data that, where you guys are observing this and, you know, what the difference is.
Okay, I was just wondering, because I know that time's supposed to be getting shorter, and yeah.
What do you mean? Because if the Lord didn't shorten the days, that all life would perish or something or other?
Yeah.
Okay, that might mean that the time is just cut short rather than the days lengthening. If you did not shorten the days, it might mean the days as an epoch rather than the actual length of day. Again, that's a translational problem in the Greek, which we have to address at some time.
That makes sense. Definitely. Have you noticed an increase in intensity and frequency of the earthquakes?
Oh, yes. Certainly, as I was saying, over the last month on the western side of the Pacific, they have increased. Another interesting fact is that the USGS recently downgraded all their earthquake reporting, so that the majority of earthquakes are downgraded by 1.2 to 1.4 Richter. So if you see a Richter 7 reported by USGS, it's really a Richter 8.2 or 8.4. And they've done this by changing the scale and the method of measuring it, which is different than that which Dr. Richter invented. And of course, he's no longer with us. But I think that there's definitely been a downgrading of the seriousness of the intensity and the number of earthquakes in those high-intensity bands that have been occurring for the last couple of years.
Do you think there's any one specific fault line that is becoming more active, or is it just all of them becoming more active?
Well, fault lines, or the major fault lines we see are around the continental borders of the land masses that, have seashore along their coastlines. I'm just trying to look and see here. I'd say that right now the eastern side of the Ring of Fire, or the eastern leg of it, which goes down into South America, is getting more active. The western has certainly been very active, and along a tributary leading up through India, through northern India and the Himalayas, and over into the Mediterranean. The internal fault lines, seismic lines, or fault lines, are harder for me to analyze other than from the reported data from USGS, because I can't look inland with the technique I use. It's based upon having a water body close or nearby to the fault line so that I can tell, what's happening there. For instance, we've seen some in Oklahoma, some in Arkansas, a number in the Juan de Fuca Plate. these things are not increasing so much at the moment, but they are a concern. I do watch them, even though I can't predict them. In Oklahoma, they say that might be due to fracking, but there is a fault line that comes from where all these are occurring. It goes eastward over through Arkansas straight into the New Madrid fault line, which would make one think maybe that's not a good idea to be fracking with something that, you know, penetrates the Juan de Fuca plate or structure of the fault line. It's a different kind of structure than normal fault lines because it has what's called dikes, rectangular dikes of solidified magma, which formed, you know, eons ago. That makes it somewhat like a brittle glass structure. So hitting it from the side or hitting it from the top, whatever, jarring that fault line up to New Madrid is not a good idea. That one I would watch. I would also watch, out of the United States, I would watch the one down in New Zealand in the North Island, which feeds a caldera, the Lake Taupo caldera. New Zealand is in a peculiar position on the planet in that it has two stretchings going on. It's actually causing a twist to the whole country, particularly in the northern part, because of the Australian plate and the Pacific plate, and there's a twist going on which is trying to rip the country apart slowly. This, we think, is what is causing heat to build up and minor earthquakes around Lake Taupo, which is the caldera. Now, that has erupted before, and that's why I'm concerned about it, because there's a heavy population in the North Island of New Zealand. That area erupted in about AD 85 to 89, somewhere in that period. It was so violent that it threw clouds of dust into the upper atmosphere that caused the Chinese astronomers of the day to record 3 days of darkness in the northern hemisphere. So we're not exempt from having this kind of stuff fall on us should it happen in New Zealand again. And even though you might not live there, might not worry about it, it will affect crops, aircraft, schedules, all kinds of stuff. So that's one area, in addition to the New Madrid, I'm looking at. And in the United States, the real worry to me is the Juan de Fuca plate up in the Cascadia subduction zone off the coast of Oregon and Washington State. And this fault line has branches that run underneath the Cascades as well. That is a well-known area of stress in the whole Ring of Fire of the Pacific that has not released in the last 55 years. It is overdue for a massive Richter 9 or better earthquake. That area I watch every day. First thing I go when I start getting the data in, I look for the Juan de Fuca plate area and see if I see any immediate thermal signs or electrical charge signs that tell me that the earthquake pressure is building up, because that's the one to worry about.
Wow. That was very helpful. Thank you.
Well, I hope it doesn't influence real estate values in the areas, but you got to be practical about this.
Yeah, that's true.
There's also a lot of stuff happening up in Alaska at the moment, too. And that's an unstable area, the whole thing. And if Juan de Fuca goes, I think it could trigger massive earthquakes all up the coast, right up into Alaska, into the heart of it as well, and along the Aleutian Island chain.
Have you noticed that the Ring of Fire is becoming more alive, too?
Well, yes, that's what I'm talking about when I was saying on the western side of the Pacific. That's the western portion of the Ring of Fire, which more appropriately has been called the Arc of Fire because it doesn't really complete a ring at the bottom. But even that is changing as small earthquakes are starting to appear along the fracture lines on the southern portion of the plate boundaries that could form the ring. And I expect more activity on the eastern side of the Ring of Fire, as I've said, which will affect not only South America, but the United States as well, and portions of Canada.
Yeah, I can see that too. Definitely. Have you noticed an increase in volcanic activity?
There has been some. It's kind of hard to measure that. You know, if you measure by the number of volcanoes going off or the amount of ejecta, the one that kind of interests us of late here is Mount Etna, and some prophecies, or a prophecy that was written down by the sleeping Christian prophet Edgar Cayce, talking about when Etna blows, and I think there's a couple of other volcanoes when it really blows really hard in the latter days here. His timing was off because he thought it would happen before 98, but if it is late, then what we're going to see is massive volcanic activity in Italy, followed by a couple of other volcanoes. I'm not sure whether they were in South America or where, but I think there was a series of three of them that had to go off, bang, bang, bang. And when these happened, that we would expect a massive earthquake on the west coast of the United States.
Sounds like we're almost there.
Well, there's still a little bit more to go. So at this point, I'm not getting overly excited about it, but I will be watching, you know, the other volcanoes to see if anything falls into place in the next few weeks as the number two volcanic release.
Yeah, I can believe that. Wow. What do you think of the weather that's going on?
Well, the weather is driven primarily by thermal engines, if you wish to call them that, but differences in temperature on the planet in various places, either in the sea or in the air or on the land or both, or all of the above. These are all ultimately driven by energy that we receive from the sun. Now, since 1992, there have been two new spectral frequencies emitted from the sun, at least two, perhaps more, in the ultraviolet range. The light of the sun in the ultraviolet can increase a great deal before it causes us to overheat. The light from the sun in the infrared bands, on the other hand, doesn't have to increase very much at all, maybe 1 or 2%. And if that happens, then we see huge storms across the planet and across the surface of other planets in the solar system as well. The sun is doing something most irregular at the moment. For this particular sunspot cycle, the sunspot cycle number 24, we're not seeing as many sunspots as expected. In fact, it's below average. And it may actually have a double sunspot peak, with the second peak occurring in 2015. The first peak is occurring now. Normally at this time of the solar cycle, the north and south pole of the sun flip-flop. And they do this and complete the cycle every 22 years in what's called the Hale magnetic cycle, H-A-L-E. Now, because the sun is throwing off coronal mass ejections and extra heat in our direction periodically through these bursts, it is affecting our weather. We're absorbing magnetic energy through the magnetic field around the Earth called the magnetic field, magnetofield, magnetopause, and all these factors feed into the upper ionosphere, which drives energy into the system. There's some energy being pumped into the Van Allen belts as well, and most of these, instead of going straight to the surface, go into form of electricity into the core of the planet, which might be affecting the expansion as well. These things cause the weather, and hence, I think in this case, the climate to be changing. It may alter permanently as this progresses. What we're seeing is not typical weather. It hasn't been for the last 2 years. Spring has come early in places. It's coming early again this year, it looks like. How stable it's going to be, I don't know, but we're seeing crop and livestock affected, you know, the numbers of them, the health of them, by these changes in the weather. And certainly if you live over in the New England states of the United States, you've been noticing a lot more wet and cold this year. While we're in drought over here in the western and midwestern parts of the United States, to the point that it's just severe. We've seen a large number of small farms disappear from the drought. Like nearly 12,000 or over 12,000 have just gone out of business in the last year. This kind of weather does not help the stability of the economy. It doesn't help the stability of populations and where they live. They will migrate to where there's water and where there's food. That's how I see the weather at the moment, as a threat, and it's not going to get better for some time yet, several years, I'm sure.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, over here in Kansas, we had almost a foot and a half of snow, and some places had 2 feet.
Yeah, even Texas is getting snow, hey?
Yeah, and then out west, you have in California, the tornadoes going on there. And then East Coast is getting pummeled with snow again.
Yeah, Australia is getting tornadoes and superstorms as well. We're not the only country experiencing weird weather. And I don't blame this in any way on things like HARP broadcast or stuff like that. These actions are bigger than man-made structures can create, even though we can attempt to steer them a little bit once they form, like hurricanes and tornadoes, using electric fields generated by HARP-type transmitters, if no other country interferes in our HARP broadcast, because they all have HARP transmitters.
Right, and that would definitely go with all of what's going on with the earthquakes and volcanoes and Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21 going on here big time.
Right, right.
Yeah, Sinkholes, they've been increasing too.
Well, yes. The area around Florida, up in the northern part of Florida and into the panhandle on the east side of the Florida panhandle, have seen a lot more sinkholes. And the area is just kind of honeycombed with weak areas in the surface, which only drop sinkholes when they get wet, and when they also when the ground is stretched under them to relieve the hydrostatic type pressure around them, in this case terrostatic. But the world itself has been seeing more of these. And if it was only in Florida, I would say, well, it's sad that it's happening to people in Florida, but that's a condition of Florida. But we've seen it elsewhere. We've seen it in Mexico. We've seen it in South America. We've seen it in China. So sinkholes, to me, are evidence that we are seeing a relief or reduction of the pressure in the mantle of the planet as it starts to expand. The stretching is allowing structures to fall that normally would hold together by just the pressure of gravity around them pushing them together. The simplest way I can say that.
Can sinkholes cause an earthquake, such as the New Madrid Fault?
Well, not normally, but in Louisiana, there are a number of salt domes that are actually called salt diapirs, but these huge salt domes are being gradually eroded away by fluids being pumped down into them for storage. Now, if salt water or fresh water leaks into these salt domes, they can cause the structures over a period of years to weaken and then collapse. Now, if an earthquake is already poised to occur in the New Madrid region, especially in the southern part of it, then some of the salt diapir collapses that are kind of imminent down in Louisiana out into the sea, the portion of the Gulf there, they could trigger those earthquakes that are already forming. In that respect, yes, but it has to be a darn big thing that happens to shake a formation like that.
Okay, that makes sense. And there's also been an increase of meteorites, too, going on. I don't know, such as California, all over the U.S. I mean, we haven't had that in a while, besides in Europe.
So, are you getting some background noise on your mic?
Yeah, I have a train in the background.
Ah, okay. Duck! Okay, sorry, the question again, I was listening to the noise.
Sorry, have you noticed an increase in meteorites, too, that have been hitting the Earth, such as the one in Russia and California and all that?
Well, in the last month, yes. The period of time, how unusual is that, I don't know. I do find it more than coincidental, as they try to tell us in the press, that a meteor passes underneath our communications network of altitude, doesn't hit the Earth, skips on out, and yet before that by a day and after that by several days, we get other pieces of debris, meteors that become meteorites over the areas you've mentioned. The scary part about it is, the uncertain part is that with the best equipment we've got, mankind cannot see certain types of small asteroids or meteors before they come into Earth effective range. If they don't have a reflectivity, or an albedo it's called, so that you can see a reflection in your telescope, or if they don't have a heat signature, a thermal signature, which you can see in an infrared telescope, which these are kind of expensive and rare. But because of this, we kind of have to wait and use statistics to see, well, what's the probability that there's a bunch of little asteroids or meteors out there that we haven't seen that are on an intersect course of the Earth. And they're just too tiny to pick up until they're close. So I don't hold this against the scientific community for not telling you about it until it's right on top of you, because they probably didn't detect it. It's just that we haven't got technology to image and track those kind of things if we don't have some kind of bounce back from them in the electromagnetic spectrum.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I had no idea that they have to be that close to the Earth in order for us to spot them. I thought you could see far away.
The big ones, yes. The ones that have reflectivity, you can. But if it's coal black, and it's dusty dirt black, and it's not reflecting light off of any of the tumbling surfaces, as it spins out there, then we won't see it. It has to reflect the light, it has to be big enough for that, you know, and close enough for our telescope to say, ah, there's a little pixel of light that's flipping and flopping and tracking through our system, and that's probably something we ought to calculate the path of. And sometimes it takes several months to calculate an accurate path. You got to be able to track it that long. If it flashes into visibility and then turns the wrong side and disappears, we don't see it. But the majority of them you can see that are bigger. It's just the smaller ones that can do a lot of damage that we can't always track.
Yeah, I can believe that, definitely. And now there's another comet coming this way, too.
Yeah. The most of the comets have one node of their orbit, a long elliptical orbit, one node which goes around our sun is the gravitational source that they're trapped by. When these comets come close to the sun, if they come close enough to be what's called a sun grazer, where they enter the upper atmosphere of the sun itself, they can cause severe eruptions. They frequently do, in fact, severe eruptions of coronal mass ejections emitted off the sun's surface, right close to where they have the closest pass by the comet. So from that point of view, when I see reports of a comet coming in, and you know, and if it's going to be a sun grazer, which there's one coming in that's going to be that, then I expect to see the threat of coronal mass ejections interfering with the electrical grids, you know, electricity grids and radio communications and satellites and a number of other things on the planet Earth, should it be Earth-directed from the sun, the coronal mass ejection.
Wow, I had no idea a comet could do that. Wow.
Look up Sun Grazer Comets. It's quite an interesting article that NASA has on the subject.
Oh, I believe it. Yeah, I'll definitely have to look that up, definitely. There's a lot of research I've been having to do lately because of how the headlines are just screaming all of what's going on.
Yes, well, it's good to try to verify a lot of these things that cause angst in a person, because a lot of the things people put two and two together and get five, and it really should still come out four. Check the sources, go to them, and don't panic. You know, if a huge thing is going to hit the Earth, it's going to wipe out all life in an extinction level event. It doesn't matter. Enjoy life till that moment. You know, don't worry about it. But certainly, if you're going to, you know, get excited, people should say, well, okay, well, let's look into this earthquake business. Let's look into the HARP stations and see what's really going on, rather than what the, you know, the underground press is saying, and try to put some rationale into it rather than just going off kind of misinformed. Otherwise, we'll create panics in areas that we don't need to.
That's very true. And there's a lot going on, especially with Bible prophecy, China and Japan. They've got issues going on over there. And North Korea threatened us today. And then,
Well, the one thing which we mentioned before, you and I, when we discussed it, is the situation in the Middle East. To me, that is God's timepiece, Israel, what's happening around Israel. For biblical prophecy, you relate it to the timing and events in Israel and around Israel. What we see now is a rapidly approaching, like within weeks, point where Iran will have the ability to make its own nuclear missiles and attack Israel. We see North Korea threatening the United States, and this is certainly in keeping with what Russia wants to happen, because if Russia gets called down to the Middle East to defend Iran and some of the other Middle Eastern Arab countries by negotiated treaties for mutual defense, if Russia gets called down there, especially if it's Iran attacking Israel and Iran gets hurt by Israel retaliating, Russia knows that it has to eliminate the major military threat to Russia if it intervenes, and that major threat is the United States military-industrial complex. To do that in time to make it effective for Russia to go ahead and be able to move down in the Middle East and back up Iran means that America has to go down fairly soon. This year sometime we have to collapse internally and not be a major threat to Russia or China, for that matter, because we have our own internal problems. Watching that tells us, and North Korea threatening to attack us, tells us that the pieces are in place and waiting to just get the go-ahead from somebody to start all the the dominoes falling, starting with Israel. The United States will have to be neutralized before Israel, or at the same time that Israel is attacked by Iran and Russia. And we know that Israel's going to have to make a preemptive move to save itself by hitting Iran's, you know, nuclear sources, its missile sources, whether it be in Iran or whether it be in Syria, somewhere near Damascus. All these things, I think, we will see start to play this year. I'm looking at a secular view rather than prophecy. I mean, we're just looking at purely secular, you know, strategies of countries and nations fighting over energy resources. Basically, is what it amounts to.
Yeah, I agree, and it'll eventually fulfill Ezekiel 38:39, Isaiah 17, and Revelation 9 all at the same time once it all hits the fan.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, and it's interesting how there's even a new movie that's supposed to be coming out on March 22nd called Olympus Has Fallen. And
what's that about?
Basically, it's about our country falling and our president getting assassinated in the mix of all that.
Oh, gee, I hadn't heard about that. What a wonderful plot.
Yeah, really. And the day it comes out is the day in which people think the abomination of desolation will occur. I'm not going to say the date on the air, of course, but yeah.
You know, I wonder about that abomination of desolation, having spent a number of days retranslating portions of the book of Daniel. He is using a term for that abomination as an it rather than a person. And, you know, most of the modern theological treatments of that passage say that it's the Antichrist, you know, proclaiming himself God, standing in the temple there and whatever. But why would we get the warning to the people of Jerusalem, when you see that which, now, it's not he, but that which makes desolate standing in the temple, don't get your clothing, don't go up to the rooftop, just immediately run and get out of Jerusalem and head, you know, for the hills as quick as you can, because, you know, like certain destruction is coming. I think that since the Antichrist of this age honors a god of forces, as Daniel says, that he will use perhaps a nuclear device, and he will place that thing in the temple and say that he will nuke the first, you know, whether it be Jewish or Christian or Muslim-type country, the first one that steps out of line according to his will, he will nuke their holy place there, all of them, in Jerusalem. And that would make desolate the city of Jerusalem as we know it today. After that, when the holy city of the Lord comes back and sits down into the area of Jerusalem, it will sit on top of the ruins, I'm pretty sure, as even the current Jerusalem sits on the ruins of the old city now.
Huh, I didn't think of it that way, because one of my friends brought to my attention that maybe the abomination of desolation is when Jerusalem is surrounded.
Why would you run to the hills? You couldn't get to the hills from there, could you?
That's true.
Yeah, there are a number of little clues to all these things that are, you know, of interest now that we have to look at carefully. You know, put them on a piece of paper and draw little lines and say, well, this has to happen before that. And does this verse actually refer to such and such at this time? Or, you know, the Gog-Magog conflicts, or, you know, the Armageddon thing. And there, you know, to me, anyone that is pedantic about how to interpret some of these things is they're not being fair to what's written in the Word. We have to be open and like children and study and try to help each other get to the bottom of it. But none of us are rabbis or teachers of the Word. We are fellow students. So we can't dictate to others, you know, pre-trib, mid-trib, post-trib, rapture, no rapture, you know, all this kind of stuff that people argue about. It is discussion points as we try to ferret out from the Word these details. And it shouldn't divide the faith. It should unify us in our common search for the truth.
Yeah, I completely agree. I've seen that time and again in the chat rooms, on specifically for the Hagman and Hagman report. People like to argue over doctrine like none other and say how right they are and be technical when there's really no need to be technical. It's more of just discussing it, like you said, and I don't know.
You know, if you ever visit a rabbi's college, or call yeshiva, one of the things that they encourage the rabbinical students to do is to debate topics that are questionable. You know, is it this way or that way? How do we interpret it? To debate these things on the basis of what's in the Torah, in their case, and in the Ketubim, the writings of the prophets, and things like that, and the Nevi'im. And they debate these things. And if you were to listen to these debates, I mean, hey, they get up in each other's face. No, you can't say this, Irving. Yeah, but Samuel, it's this way. And they yell, they shout. And when the class is over for the day, they're arm in arm, let's go have a cuppa, you know, it's okay, it was done, we just had a discussion, and let's not be enemies, and they aren't. This is, we should take a lesson from this.
I agree. Yeah, I remember in Bible college we had discussions, but we didn't have debates, and of course I have had to relearn everything from when I was in Bible college, because I was taught incorrectly on a lot of things, but it's amazing how the church chooses to get divided over anything and everything without studying it, or if they do study it, they still want to debate, but at the same time, they're so stuck on, well, this is the correct way, and this is how it should be done, and blah, 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 and it's like, no, 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 you got to keep an open mind, because this is God's word. You know, you got to think out of the box, yes, but it's, yeah, I hear
you know, Elizabeth, we accept what we want to as the basis of our truth foundations of whatever argument, whether it be mathematics or whatever. We say, you know, I read such and such's book, I studied under such and such's ministry, and he said, or that book said, and you pick a point where you say, well, that's what I'm going to accept as my bedrock. But that's not the cleverest way to do it. You've got to say, I accept that for the moment until someone presents me with an argument, you know, a discussion, says, look, have you thought about this affecting what you base your position on? And I don't mean to knock the slats out from under you, they say, but can we share knowledge on this? Can you tell me where I'm wrong? And when you ask questions rather than dictate, then you get to the closer to the truth every time.
Yep, I completely agree. And do you think the current state of the church is apostate?
The churches, the major denominations, you know, Catholic, Protestant, whatever, these major denominations have become quite secular in their operation, and they avoid the hard questions from the pew. They don't want to impact the offerings that come in and the support of the ministry and the minister himself. In that respect, yes.
Yeah, I agree. And I just resigned from the church I was at because of just how apostate it's become. But more than anything, it was the Lord leading me to do that. And it was perfect timing before everything started to go crazy and become more crazy in this world. But when I was there, as we were transitioning in leadership with the administrator I was working with at that time, and then I was going to work with the new one, I noticed that the one that was there for 14 and a half years, she was like, well, we've got to love, and rather than talk about heaven or hell. And I'm like, excuse me? You know, back of my mind. We've got to talk the truth like Jesus did rather than avoiding it. I almost walked out, but I didn't. But, you know, I've since then given my 2 cents. But, yeah.
I've been there and done that. Number of churches. I know what you're talking about. Yeah, they just don't want to hear.
Yeah, they're tolerant when they shouldn't be.
Well, they plan more, you know, church picnics and retreats and stuff and new buildings and then they do, you know, planning studies. I studied in a church down in Australia, which actually all of us got together and started chipping away old bricks, chipping the mortar off them every Saturday to get enough bricks to actually build a church building. You know, we didn't go out and hit the sidewalk looking for donations so much as we got out there and collected the stuff from refuse to build our church. We did have to buy a few things, but the point is that we got together, and once we had built our church, there were about 12 families, and we started studying Hebrew, self-teaching it from books that we got out of Behrman House in New York, so we could study the Old Testament as well as the New Testament and get to the meat of the matter rather than using a summarized version in Strong's Concordance. And my goodness, did we discover things we never thought about and never heard in the Old Testament. Just things that impact heavily on how you interpret the New Testament. That's why Jesus said, as Daniel the prophet said, blah, blah, blah. He promoted him to prophet status where, you know, traditional Judaism at the time there, in Jesus' time, did not recognize Daniel as a formally trained and acceptable prophet at all. They didn't want to include him in the book of the prophets, you know, the Nevi'im.
Yeah, and he had so much insight to what's going on now.
Absolutely, and it was sealed until this generation.
Yeah, exactly. The book of Daniel is so fascinating.
Yes, it can be quite confusing at times, too, but that's part of the coding that's put in there. And it's made so that an infidel, if you wish, one who has not studied the Hebrew mysticism, the Hebrew teachings in the Torah, who is not basically really close with the Christian and Hebrew teachings, could not decode and understand the messages. I'll give you one example, which has bothered translators. I'm sure you heard this in your Bible school as well. What was that strange phrase meaning when it says the Antichrist this age will put himself above the God of gods, above the desire of women, and above every other god? Now, if you know grammatics, that is a weird statement to make, because the front part of it is about the God of gods, the back part of it is about other gods, and the middle part's about the desire of women. What does being queer have to do with gods? And that's, you know, you think, oh, you know, tilt, that doesn't mean anything. What it meant in Daniel's time was that every Hebrew mother, every woman, wanted to be the mother of the Son of God. They knew he was coming. They wanted to be the mother of him. Therefore, you have that phrase retranslated and decoded now. It says, and the Antichrist puts himself above the God of gods, the Elohim, the Creator, above the Son of God, and above every other god. Do you see how it makes sense now?
Yeah.
And it was hidden in plain sight, but only if you have the Hebrew mindset.
That's true. And that's why it's so important to go back to the original language.
I couldn't stress it more.
Yeah, so important. I mean, yesterday one person was getting upset in the Hagman chat over one word, and I couldn't believe it because they were just so stuck on, well, it was technically this. I'm like, technically it's not if you go back to the original Greek. And so if I get back on there tonight, then I'm going to be like, excuse me, in the Greek, this is what that word means. So,
well, you know, as well, you just stated a while ago, there are going to be people that are going to choose to believe what they will, no matter what you present to them as solid proof, you know. If you and I don't accept the Word of God as the truth, the foundation to build upon, then, you know, our argument kind of falls apart. We choose to choose that as our foundation that we trust. Others choose Madame Blavatsky's writings, the Book of Urantia, this or that, you know, the Mohammedans, of course, the works of in the Quran. But they choose to believe that, and we choose differently. So in the end, when you're arguing with people over a word or two words or whatever, they're going to believe what they want to. And if there are none so blind, or so deaf, in essence, none so blind as those who will not see. They will not see. Not they cannot see, but they will not see.
That's true. I've seen a lot of that, even in the Hagman chat, sometimes in my chat. But yeah, definitely.
Well,
and we need to unify rather than divide in the times of the living.
Well, the good Lord did say that he came to bring the sword to divide the sheep from the goats in his time until he comes back. So I suppose there are more goats than sheep at the moment. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. But sure, we'll find out soon.
I think you're right. We're getting very close to the moment.
We sure are. There's this. And I know it's overwhelming at times, too, and everything. But the really neat thing is just to see prophecy fulfilled and just to see God work, and it's mind-blowing and so exciting to see.
I know, and some people are saying, how can you say it's exciting? And, you know, they're concerned about that. But to me, you know, I find it exciting, as you say, because it means an end to all of this chaos and division on the planet is at hand. And you know, I know that there's bad times going to happen because we're at that the end of the age. And I'm not excited about that as saying, you know, I want to see people hurt and people die and terrible chaos hit the planet. But I am excited in that it means that finally an end to the last 2,000 years of terror, in fact, the whole human experiment, you know, or human courtroom, is about to come to a head and we will have a golden age here. That's yes, exciting.
Exactly. And the evil will be purged. It'll be great.
I look forward to that. I do.
Yeah. Yeah, last night I heard of black-eyed children. Never knew it existed.
Yeah, I've heard about that. I don't know what they are. What did they say they were and what you listened to?
Well, Ali Marzulli was talking about it. And basically,
oh, yes, I saw that on his DVD. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, and he was basically, he's not totally sure, but on his website he mentioned that he thinks there could possibly be hybrids.
But well, yeah.
Yeah, they could be.
These children, I mean, some of the ones he reported on his DVD that allegedly had the black eyes were like just standing by a roadside or on a street corner or something. They didn't appear to be with parents. So they may well be hybrids that have been built by Satan and his followers so that they can put disembodied spirits into those bodies at the time they need them and have human bodies, you know, to walk around in. I don't know. But it's spooky to even visualize something like that.
Yeah. And what they do to just fool people, you know, can I get in your car? Can I get a drink of water? You know, stuff like that.
Yeah. Invite me in. That's very suspicious, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I told my husband immediately, keep on lookout for black-eyed children so that he knows as well whenever it all hits the fan.
Well, I think we're going to have to be on the lookout for a lot of creepy individuals, and you have to separate those from the truly hungry and needy. But this time, when the disasters start to strike, economic and weather and you know, invasion or civil war or whatever.
Hi, this is Dr. Elizabeth Mockey. Thank you for listening today. Please make a donation at BBS Radio at radio station number 2 under the Tribulation News link. That is on Sunday nights from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Thank you for your time and your willingness to listen to the latest news and latest information that is pertinent as we enter perilous times. Stan, do you have any closing thoughts for our audience?
Oh, I think we've thrown enough at them today. I think they ought to ponder what we're talking about, and we'll talk to them again another time.
Yeah, we did throw a lot at them. You're right. Yeah, I want to thank you for coming on both Blog Talk Radio and BBS Radio.
Thank you for the invite, Dr. Mattke.
And keep staying focused on Christ, and we'll get through it, and it'll all be good. And as you and I stated earlier, you know, evil will be purged, and we'll be with Jesus, and it'll be so much better.
All right.
Yep. Thank you again, and have a great rest of the week. God bless you.
God bless you. Bye-bye now.
Bye.